to the doctor, and the doctor said, son, you look older than me, and I'm 71. You're falling apart, you're not living right. I went to the doctor, and the doctor said loud, you got to stop hanging out with that old in crowd. Living's a battle, and you're losing the fight. I went to the doctor, and the doctor said, boy, your body is a temple. It's not a toy. Fill up this here paper cup and give it to the nurse. Don't spill it now. I went to the doctor. Doctor said, friend, this should be the middle, but it could be the end. You better get better, else you're gonna get worse. Oh, I went to the doctor.
Hello, you're tuned to listener-supported community radio, FM 90.1, KZFR, heard in the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. And you're listening to The Doctor's Inn. I'm Ken Logan, a family practice doctor here in Chico, and I do this Doctor's Inn show from 6 to 7, the third Thursday of each month. And what I like to do is have subjects on the show health and medical related. And what I'm hoping that they are subjects that you, the listeners, are interested in hearing about. I like to have you hear about these subjects. By the way, I'm going to give you an email address, my email address, if you are interested in a specific medical or health-related subject that you would like me to cover or have a guest on relative to that subject, please let me know. I'm really open to that. To what you want to hear. So my email address is K Logan. That's LOGAN, MD. So K Logan MD at yahoo.com. I need to tell you that the voices, I'm sorry, the opinions voiced on this program are not necessarily the opinions of KZFR staff, board of directors, or underwriters. They're my opinions and the opinions of my guests. Speaking of underwriters, thank goodness, The Doctor's Inn is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Friends of the Arts, a state local partner to the California Arts Council. Since 2001, Deborah Lucero and Friends of the Arts has been creating economic opportunity through arts and culture by producing community festival and events, including Artoberfest, the True North Tour, the NorCal Jazz Festival, the Salmon Festival, and more. To learn about Friends of the Arts, visit the website friendsoftheartsupstate.org. And by the bankruptcy law offices of Michael O. Hayes, Hayes as in H-A-Y-S, a proud supporter of community radio. Michael Hayes offers free consultations and payment plans for Chapter 7 and 13 bankruptcies and has been serving the Northern California residents for more than 30 years. The telephone number for Michael Hayes, spelled H-A-Y-S, is 892-8916 or on the internet at mhayeslaw.com. And in M. Hayes Law, that's mhayeslaw.com. So today on the show, we have the, I'm so thrilled that we have Dr. Junie Banjeri Stevens PhD from Chico State University. She's Associate Director of Counseling and Wellness Center there at Chico State. And welcome.
Thank you for having me. I think we're going to be new best friends.
There you go. Excellent. And I want to tell the listeners a slight bit about the subject matter for today. And what has struck me over the last few weeks has to do with what I will say is some elements of mental stressors or mental conditions or emotional conditions that have become apparent throughout the country and throughout all of us citizens, but more specifically for today's discussion in our students in college and universities in this country and in our state and in Chico State area and Butte College. So Dr. Banjeri Stevens, being the Associate Director of Counseling and Wellness Center at Chico State, my gosh, mm-hmm. You're in the thick of things.
We sure are. So, it is a fact.
So I'm going to open the mic to you, Doc, and please talk to us.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I very much appreciate you giving me this opportunity to talk to people. I mean, this is mental health, for better or for worse, from my perspective, is on people's minds. I think we're entering an era where people, what should I say? So I started grad school in like 1998. And at that time, you know, one of the things that we really were doing in college counseling centers, so I've done all of my training in college counseling centers, and we were really still working on helping students kind of work through the stigma that comes with mental illness, that, mm-hmm. you know, people didn't want to come talk to a stranger in a weird room in the corner of campus. We were often in like, you know, some building that was on the outskirts of campus. And so we were doing a lot of outreach on, you know, that trying to destigmatize mental illness and normalize, you know, some of the stress and the feelings that go along with being a college student. While we still do have a lot of stigma associated with those things, what we're seeing is this generation of students, it seems more comfortable asking for the help, but we haven't caught up, I think, as I like to say, kind of the grown-ups haven't caught it up with like knowing how to help them.
Interesting. That's a good point.
Yeah.
And, you know, just the fact that the stigmata has waned or is gone mm-hmm. or leaving, you know, because my take on this subject, I'm a family practice mm-hmm. doctor, and so my take on this subject is mental conditions that are so common, they're almost in all of us. I'll say essentially mm-hmm. all of us mm-hmm. to one degree or another. Mm-hmm. So it's a matter of severity mm-hmm. and how that severity affects an individual's life will vary from person to person. So that I hear you with that stigmata of mm-hmm. of mental conditions that are getting in the way of your life mm-hmm. now being discussed more readily and mm-hmm. and like you said now and then of course we have the issue of what to do and you like you said the our abilities maybe limited, but we're going to hear all about
yes.
this stuff. I'll
yes.
shut up now. I'm
no,
back to
you're
you.
Fine. You're fine. I mean, what I will tell you is I just came from doing a presentation for students who are incoming first-year students.
Oh.
And the song and dance that I've been doing lately is really trying to preach this gospel of emotional literacy.
Oh,
so,
wow.
So stay with me here. So I'm doing this presentation where I have a metaphor where I describe our feelings are a lot like other bodily functions. For example, pooping, right?
Oh, good.
Pooping
okay.
is not something that we should be ashamed of. It's something that everybody does. It's something that everybody, you know, that all human beings, you know, do this in order if they're, you know, healthy and in good condition.
Normal natural function.
Normal natural function, right? And the problem comes with, we learn to judge that, you know, the smell of poop, the, you know, what comes along with poop is bad, right? So I will tell you that my uncle is a colorectal surgeon. And so what I tell the students is that, you know, he tells us every Thanksgiving when we get together for our family gathering, you know, he gives us all these tips on how to keep our, you know, eat our fiber and keep everything moving well and doing all these things and paying attention to what your poop is trying to tell you because it might be giving you valuable data. I think that feelings are the same thing. And the problem is that we learn to, feelings become a problem because we learn to judge them. Oh, so for example, happiness is a good feeling, but anger is a bad feeling, right? And this is where we get into a lot of trouble because our students, you know, they'll feel distress, and all of us, right? We feel distress, and then they have learned over time through their family culture, through our society, that it's not okay to feel angry, or it's not okay to feel uncomfortable, or it's not okay to feel panicked. And that fight or flight, you know, mechanism is going, you know, haywire. And they have judged that that's bad. And so it must be pathological. I need help. And so I really just feel like I'm on this mission to help people understand that, you know, sometimes that reaction is the absolute appropriate reaction.
Normal,
right? Especially when it comes to, you know, like a lot of our students there, you know, they may not realize that they wouldn't describe it as grief, but if you move from Southern California to Chico for the first time in your life,
first year students,
perhaps, you know, you're used to being around people maybe that look more like you, maybe that, you know, have kind of values that are more well aligned with yours. And then you come here and there's a deep sense of loss.
Yeah.
And so, you know, with that loss comes some confusion and dismay and feeling, you know, just out of place.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, you have professors and instructors and roommates and people saying, okay, now this is due and we have these expectations of you. And, you know, we all of those kind of feelings that come along with being in this environment sometimes get interpreted as I'm weak. If I'm not feeling even keel and prepared for all of this. And, you know, so that's often like what I do up in the counseling center is not really rocket science. It's basically validating that that is a normal feeling to have.
What a great way to start this discussion with the premise that we, that these are, that this is not, it's not good. It's not an issue of good versus bad and
exactly.
What you're feeling. It's just the way you are feeling, and it's appropriate.
Yes. I mean, just
who wouldn't feel those same things, and it's a normal feeling.
And if you had some, you know, pain in your body, I hope that your patients would come talk to you about it, and they'd say, this is where it hurts, and it started hurting after I did this, and all of that information, it's all data for you.
I wouldn't say they were bad.
Right. Exactly, right? You would say, that's interesting data. Let's try to figure out what that means.
Let's try to help.
Yeah.
Yeah, gotcha.
And so it truly, you know, I say that, you know, most people don't come to therapy because of what they're feeling. They come because of how they're judging their feelings.
Oh.
So I'm really angry at my parent. I'm really angry at my, you know, my father for not being there for me, but I feel ashamed because it's wrong to be mad at a parent.
Oh, wow.
Right? So sometimes we have to untangle, like, you know, let's, you know, if we don't judge that anger, what is it trying to tell you?
Yeah. If we don't judge that anger, well said. Yeah, we have to keep that in mind.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, it's an advanced skill because I still have to work on that, right? I mean, it's, you know, so what we are also seeing is, we had talked about this on the phone earlier, that, you know, I think higher education has done a beautiful job of opening the doors of access to university.
For students who maybe many, many years ago were not able to come into the university system.
Right. You know, they were, you know, kind of, those doors were closed to them for one reason or another.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Uh-huh.
So we have done, I think, you know, it's getting better and better. We're letting in more, you know, more students who are first generation are coming in.
First generation as in?
They're the first generation of students to go to college in their family, right? You know, more students from different cultural backgrounds. Uh-huh. You know, more students are also getting mental health treatment prior to college.
Uh-huh.
And so students who may have had some mental health issues or some maybe learning disabilities, you know, or other kinds of, you know, disabilities that may have precluded them from participating in higher ed, now they're coming, which is, that's great. Like, we say that we are in the business of, you know, helping people break cycles, right? So this is what we want. But as I said earlier to you, I think the issue is that, you know, we're now kind of catching up on learning, like, okay, what is different about this population of students in terms of...
Population of students that are maybe, that segment of the population may of students may be different than... say 10 years ago, eh?
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. So, you know, for example, you know, we're learning so much about how trauma affects the brain. That is the new big thing. And I know, you know, this study on adverse childhood experiences is, you know, all of us are speed reading everything we can about it because it's really helping us understand that there's a very different maybe definition of trauma that can be equally impactful to people. So I think a lot of times when we talk to students about PTSD, they think, well, I'm
PTSD,
post-traumatic stress disorder. So we don't, you know, for many people, they associate that with somebody who's been in the military and who has seen combat or has seen, you know, has been in a violent situation where they see, you know, some really horrific violent acts. So that is certainly something that we are seeing with our students, right? If they're coming from communities that had a great deal of violence.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also, we talk about big T trauma and little T trauma. And, you know, we talk about developmental trauma being a thing.
So tell us what little T trauma is.
Sure. So, you know...
And with that, post-traumatic stress disorder associated with such. So little T, what, tell us.
So, you know, I think the Adverse Childhood Experiences Study really looked
at Adverse Childhood Experiences Study.
Mm-hmm. So ACEs is how we refer to it. And this was a study that was a large study that was done by Kaiser. You know, they surveyed, I think it's like 15,000 people on just, you know, experiences with trauma that they've had. And then they've done some correlations.
Trauma in quotes.
Trauma. So they identified, oh gosh, now you're testing me, about 10 big ones. And they include like having a parent who is incarcerated.
Okay.
Witnessing violence is certainly one of them.
Yeah.
Emotional neglect, physical neglect. Right.
And I'm just reiterating that to the listeners. So here we're calling this quote-unquote trauma in this person's life,
yes.
This student in this case's life.
Indeed.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. So, or having a sick parent at home, right? So these are some things.
A sick parent at home. Having that be a traumatic thing for this student to have gone through in their life before they got to college, for instance.
And in terms of trauma, we think of it as... you know, the number one thing that a traumatic experience does is it takes away your sense of control, right? Your sense that there's some order to the world, right?
Yeah.
Which we know, especially for children, is so huge.
Yeah.
And so if you don't have that sense of control, your brain is kind of constantly living in this fight or flight space.
Yeah.
And that's what we're seeing with students, right? So they have a memory that's associated with this feeling, right, of panic or fear or whatever that is. And, you know, that same feeling gets activated when we see them in college, but it's that they have a math test. It's not
So they've gone through their life with these trauma in their life, such as an ill parent or neglect as they were in their childhood, both physical and mental neglect, for instance, or other problems of the parents, such as incarceration or whatever.
Drug and alcohol abuse, certainly.
Oh, drug and alcohol abuse, yeah. So whatever these traumas, quote-unquote, through their life, then when they come to college, some of those same feelings pop up. Similar, different cause,
right.
But similar feelings and different inside their guts,
right?
In the middle of their brain, in their belly,
exactly, right. So that amygdala kind of starts firing, and you know, what we have to do is just help them understand that feeling of you know, I need to flee the situation or fight my way out of it, or I'm just freezing in panic, we try to kind of help ground them back into the present and help them understand that they're safe right now. And, you know, what other choices do I have? Because that's the difference between when you're a child and when you're an adult, is that you don't have as much choice when you're a child.
Oh, yeah.
Right. But we're now even, you know, there's like some great research on, you know, doing mindfulness with children and for, you know, they're having great results in helping you know, kids as young as kindergarten, even being able to kind of self-soothe.
Ooh, that'll be good.
Yeah, right.
You know, and I just want to reiterate, go back to, you know, you and I were speaking to the reaction that students may have, college students may have to their new environment and the stresses that come with college or the changes that come with that in their life, and how that revisit some of these emotional things that responses that they've had throughout their life before they came to college. And I'm just going to reiterate something about that. It's normal to have those responses to stress and trauma. It's not abnormal. So I that goes back to that not judgmental in a I'm being bad I'm being weak. You said the word weak, and that's a
huge
good
one,
huge word. You know, you're not being weak when you discuss this, when you recognize this in yourself and seek help.
Yes,
it's not a weakness. It's, as a matter of fact, it's the opposite of weakness. Weakness would be ignoring and not having the guts to come in and confront it for yourself.
To get that mole checked out, right? I'm afraid of what I'm going to find out, so I don't want to get that mole checked out, right?
Analogy.
Yeah, and I think, so the big challenge that we're seeing right now, or what we're, you know, I think it's actually a wonderful challenge for our country right now, that we've got this kind of generation gap. So I think we do have a generation of students, like I said, who is more willing to say, yeah, I have feelings and they cause me some distress and anxiety. But then we still have a couple generations of folks who are saying, well, back in my day when I didn't have any money in college and my dad used to hit me and, you know, I went through this and this and this and I just had to suck it up and get through it.
Right.
I mean,
that's where my parents' age, that generation was.
Yeah. And I think this is like where we have to kind of have mutual compassion.
Yeah.
Because I think sometimes...
Say that word again.
Mutual compassion.
Describe how that fits in here. Well,
yes. So
say it again, please.
Compassion.
Mutual compassion.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, go ahead. What?
Because I think when somebody is talking about their own trauma, it's... we expect that it's going to trigger your trauma.
Oh.
Right? So somebody is expressing... You know, if somebody's crying in front of you, expressing their distress, it's... I want it to trigger your empathy, right? Like, I want it to have some, you know...
To the person who's listening.
Exactly. Uh-huh. And it's also normal, because I'm feeling distress, for me to want you to stop feeling distress.
Just to help.
Feel better. Feel better, right?
Yeah, that's normal. Desire.
Right, that's a normal
reaction.
Human desire. Uh-huh. So it's hard for us to kind of recalibrate this idea that rather than saying, oh, don't worry about that, that's not that big a deal. Don't, you know, this, you're going to get through this. Or, you know... That isn't really a problem. Those are first world problems. You know, that's not really something to worry about.
Instead, say
what we know,
or feel,
validating,
or say, validating.
Like, I can see how you would feel that way. It sounds like you're really afraid that, you know, if you fail this class, your parents are going to be disappointed.
That is a big deal, what you just said. You know, validating their feelings.
Yeah.
And not discounting them and trying to... what's the word? Deflect them, or encourage deflection by the client, by the person who's having those feelings, but accepting those feelings and acknowledging them, eh?
Yes. It is hard. I mean, I have 3 kids at home. I hope they're not listening. But, you know, I mean, some days hard, right?
It's hard. When you hear those things, you want to fix it.
Exactly.
You want to fix it.
Or I want them to learn to self-soothe, right?
Yeah.
Because... maybe I've had a hard day, right? And like, I'm not sure I have the energy to really sit there and validate them. But, you know, my hope always is that I do give them that time and that space, because that you know, for so many of the students that we're working with, and for that matter, so many of the colleagues that I talk to, that was what we didn't get, right? So when I ask a
in our
client,
in our lives,
that's right,
early lives,
right? So when I talk to them, you know, sometimes I'll ask students, like, you know, what is it that you wish you had heard?
Mm-hmm. And that's a good one.
Yeah, and they'll just say, you know, you're right, or I'm here for you.
Yeah.
Or, you know,
I hear what you're going through.
Do you need a hug? Right?
Yeah,
like,
do you need a hug?
It's not even, you know, it's not rocket science.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes, you know, so the trick is someday being able to do that for yourself, right? To you be that voice for yourself. But, you know, part of the healing is sitting with somebody and having them bear witness to what you did experience and having somebody validate that sounds like it was traumatic.
And I just want to revisit something you said a minute ago. When you are someone sitting with someone who is telling you about these difficult times that they're having, mm-hmm. be it at college or mm-hmm. elsewhere, mm-hmm. And then when you're listening to them, simply validating, mm-hmm. listening, mm-hmm. And validating is so meaningful and important, and you said, and it's sometimes difficult.
Yeah,
you said to for us to sit there and listen, and be accepting of yep. what we're hearing and validating yep. that, because we might be having a bad day.
Exactly right. So there's that's where the self-compassion comes in, right?
Self-compassion.
That, you know, I think. I read in some
self-compassion.
Book.
Let's say that again.
Self-compassion.
And you said, so this is part, and self-compassion is part of the mutual
yes,
compassion.
Indeed.
That's where you got the mutual compassion.
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah. And I think that self-compassion is also a really challenging thing, right?
Yeah.
So when I do screw up with my kids, I got to give myself some compassion and say, you know, next time I will try to do better, versus, you know, I know even still, like, my natural instinct is to, like, rationalize why I made the choice
right.
I did, right?
Right.
So I don't have to feel those distressing, yucky feelings of being wrong.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Ah.
And this is, I think this is our biggest challenge. Like, so, you know, what I try to tell students and, you know, the colleagues I work with, like, the goal isn't to just say, oh, I'm so sorry that happened to you. Of course, you don't have to turn in your paper, right? That isn't the goal. The goal is to say, I'm so sorry that happened to you, and this is kind of triggering a lot of, you know, memories of whatever, you know, inadequacy or whatever it is. I mean, I don't expect people to say all that.
Yeah.
But, you know, how can I help you get this paper done?
Yeah, how can I help you?
What do you need? And how can I help you get
right
some
now
control back?
At this,
right.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Because
yeah.
I think that is where people get nervous. I think when we talk about
caregivers?
Yes, when uh-huh. we talk about compassion and validating, that aren't we just kind of giving people a free pass to have,
yeah.
you know,
to not
to engage in
to
engage in behavior that's not, you know,
useful for them
yeah. or for society, right?
Yeah, like, exactly.
You know,
especially useful for as, yeah, I hear you.
Right, like uh-huh. again, I think people.
In other words, don't. I'm just mm-hmm. jumping in here. Mm-hmm. You don't want to have the compassion in a way where you encourage that student, for instance, to not do that paper that
right.
they have to do.
Right. You know, and so I guess the way I put it is I had a professor who once asked me, how did I know I was learning? And I thought, gosh, no one's ever asked me that before, right? I was 30 years old in my
PhD. You were what?
I was 30 years old in my PhD program, and I never thought about that before. And then my answer was, I think it's because I'm mad all the time. And I realized that I was working with a supervisor at my practicum, who she and I kind of philosophically were on very different pages. And I was just convinced she was wrong about everything. And why was she challenging me on every, you know, kind of decision I was making with clients? And then I realized it was because she was pushing me up against kind of my growth edge, right? And it was making me feel uncomfortable, and it was making me feel inadequate, and it was making me feel like, you know, maybe I wasn't as good at this as I thought I was. And I now see that same supervisor at meetings, because we go to the same meetings together, and I say, you were right about everything.
And this now was part of learning
it's
about yourself.
Learning, right? And so I often tell students that, you know, is it possible that this distress you're feeling is a sign that you're growing?
Wow. Hey, I tell you what, it's about at the half of the hour. Why don't we take a little music break? What do you think, Sandra?
Sounds great.
All right, let's take a music break. We'll be right back with Dr. Junie Bungeri Stevens, PhD from Chico State. Stick around. Hello, listeners. Thank you for tuning in to the Doctor's Inn. This is Dr. Ken Logan, a family practitioner here in Chico for the Doctor's Inn. And we're sitting here with Dr. Junie Bungeri Stevens, PhD, in
counseling psychology.
Counseling psychology at Chico State, California State University, Chico, for those of you listeners outside the area. And she is the Associate Director of the Counseling and Wellness Center at Chico State, which is, in my opinion, that's a very important position. And what we have been talking about over the first half of the show has to do with the main thing we've been talking about is some of the feelings that come up with students here at a college or university, such as Chico mm-hmm. State, at that stage in their life, and the changes that come with entering into a new environment, leaving home, etc. And so let us continue, mm-hmm. Dr. Bungeri Stevens.
You could just call me Junie.
Junie, boy, that's easier if you call me Ken.
Okay, I will.
Okay, yeah, so let's talk some more. Tell us some more. We've kind of. You've given us actually some wisdom about your approach with some of the in trying to help some of the clients, some of the students, relative to how they can accept their feelings mm-hmm. in a non-judgmental way, mm-hmm. and then proceed in their life.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, so tell us more. Tell us more about any of that, please.
Well, you know, I guess like the one thing I do want to talk about is we are in the mental health profession getting more attention. And like, again, mm-hmm. you and I had talked about this before we started.
In the country
that, you know, we're hearing a lot more. We need more mental health providers. We need this kind of care. We need this.
And that's, and I would think that I don't know why that is, that we as a society are more, have our ears open more so and more open-minded to the emotional and mental health wellness, mental wellness, let's say, of all of us.
Yeah.
I'm not sure why that is.
I mean, I think,
I'm glad that we're open-eared and open-minded.
I mean, I my thought is that, you know, we're learning more about how those mental health issues turn into physical health issues, which then turn into mental health issues. I mean, I think, you know, you can't deny what the research is telling us, that, you know, if you are, you know, if you are struggling with heart disease or with, you know, chronic pain or any of these things, you know, who knows which comes first, but that's going to have some mental health consequences.
Absolutely. And, you know, you're you're sitting here with a primary care physician, and we see that. I guess I could grab a number here. 90% of the time, or more, you know, when we see people with when I should say, I'm dealing with a medical condition on a patient, or over time, chronic medical conditions with patients, the emotional and the mental side of their health is integral in how their health is and goes, but also how I am able to interact with them.
And you know, I think also with our college student population, you know, one of the hard things is some of the behaviors that are interfering with their physical health, for drinking and drug use, for example. You know, I talk to students a lot about, I know that I don't have anything that's going to work as fast or as well as, you know, alcohol or weed, right? In terms of helping you cope with some of these feelings. But the long-term effect of those treatments, in quotes, right?
Those are temporary brain changes.
Exactly.
Very temporary.
Exactly.
And with consequences.
Right. You know, and I think that is the challenge is, you know, when we talk about, you know, how you're coping with some of these painful memories, you know, I get it. I get why you want to obliterate those feelings.
And so what Dr. Juni is talking about is, you know, some of those feelings and memories. You know, what she had talked about on the first part of the hour was sometimes when we have our reaction, our self, when we are reacting to some of our stresses, including college stresses, what is at play may very well be, may very well relate to our past stresses and what we talked about as little t or traumas, you know, not physical trauma, but maybe emotional trauma of little t.
Right. What are well, I mean, I would say like the, any time that that sense of control has been you know, taken away from you
throughout
and,
your life.
Yeah, and in many ways that that's part of growing up, right? Like I don't have control here, but that's what we're trying to teach you is like, but you do have control in other ways, right? Like, so maybe, you know, I'm not able to go to the bathroom when I want to, but in 15 minutes, well, you're going to get a break, right? So, you know, that's part of learning to be, have that self-control and that self-regulation.
Great.
And so I think for a lot of our students, you know, they, when you're not in a situation that is predictable, you know, when you're in
like
a situation
college.
Like college, but also like if you've grown
like
up
life.
In like life, right? But if you're, if you experience more than, you know, kind of what is healthy, you know, level of unpredictability or chaos in your life, dang, that is going to be a hard environment then to teach that, that person, that little person, like, okay, where do you have control, right? Because if the
which
adults in your life, right, if they aren't feeling any sense of control either, right? So this is kind of, you know, we talk in the biz, we talk, we have lots of little sayings, right? Like, so hurt people, right? So if you are growing up in
so
an environment.
So people who are hurting will hurt people.
Exactly, right? And so that's the cycle. And then now you've learned to relate to people in a certain way. And so now you come to college and it may not even have anything to do with that math exam. It might be the, you know, roommate situation you have.
Sure. Some other stress.
Some other stressor, right?
And how you relate to it may be because of the cycle that you're continuing from what, how you've dealt with stress over the, whatever stress it was as growing up. And by the way, I'm just going to reiterate, not good, not bad. The stresses or the trauma and the reaction and the emotionalness that you have relative to whatever in in your life before, now, and in the future, be it at college or elsewhere.
Right.
Not good, not bad. It's non-judgment. We are non-judgmental on this because reactions to traumas, be they little traumas or not physical traumas, but other emotional traumas, reactions to them are normal. It's normal if you're a human being to react in certain ways. It's just a matter of addressing it for your own benefit and help.
Absolutely. I mean, sometimes, you know, I do less of this now, but when I first started, I did more kind of career counseling, right? Like helping students pick majors and find a career path. And sometimes I would say, like, tell me what makes you angry, right? Just what we were talking about earlier. And, you know, they'd say, well, this, you know, injustice or this makes me angry. And I'd say, I wonder what major that is, right? And so we'd look like, is that, you know, sociology? Is that, you know, like, you know, something about you could write about that in an English class, or you could, you know, you wanted to see more, you know, I don't know, robots get made or something. I don't know, whatever made you
how
angry.
That could fit into their future.
Right. But again, right, like if you're judging that as like, this must mean I shouldn't be here, or this must mean that I'm doing it wrong. You're not paying attention to this valuable information.
Yeah, valuable information if used correctly and not coming down upon yourself relative to that, but utilizing it in your life.
Yeah, and I think, so another big conversation we have with students is trying to tease apart if they're feeling guilt or shame. So we talk a lot about that. So for example, you know, guilt, I liken it to, when I do something that I know goes against my values, I feel guilty, right? So if I accidentally steal a pack of gum, right, from the bookstore, I feel guilty because I know it's wrong to steal. It's, you know, personally not my value to steal. So I feel guilty, right? So shame is, you know, man, if I had just been a better person and had been focused on what I was doing, I wouldn't have accidentally swiped this, you know, gum. Or, you know, that I feel like I'm a defective person and that's why I behave that way or this happened to me. And, you know, guilt I can work with, right? Because guilt is like, okay, now we make amends and we choose to make a different choice. Shame is, you know, this real core beliefs that are very self-destructive.
Deep.
And not compassionate, right?
Not self-compassionate.
Yeah.
Not compassionate relative to yourself.
Exactly. Exactly. And so that often is a big piece that I think we have to help students understand the difference between those two things.
Yeah, between guilt and shame.
Yeah, but imagine if you don't, if you, you know, shame is such a powerful emotion that, dang, I never want to feel that emotion, and a six-pack makes it go away.
Oh, I get your point. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Okay. Well,
so, that I mean, that is certainly, you know, a big piece of this puzzle is, you know, it's, I don't think the goal is to not feel anything, right? And I think somehow in this, in maybe not just this country, but, you know, I don't know, maybe the world, we've kind of developed this addiction to, like,
numbing ourselves?
Yeah, numbing, or just never feeling distress.
Oh, really? Oh, as it, because it's bad?
Because it's bad. We perceive it as, right? That, like, if I'm feeling distress, I must be doing it wrong.
Versus,
I said before, right? Like, is this me learning? Is this me growing? Is this me changing?
Yeah, it's okay to feel that distress.
Yeah.
I mean, it's uncomfortable, but it's not, it's self-compassion would say that I accept that distress and I feel it and I don't come down on myself about it.
And certainly I wouldn't want somebody to live there.
Yeah, stay
for a prolonged period of time, right? So, like, we want to kind of come back to that homeostasis place, but
and how to work with it?
How to
work with
and
it?
And we talk about riding the wave, right? Riding the wave of that distressing emotion versus, like, how do I set up my life so I never feel that emotion?
Yeah,
because it's not going to happen.
Yeah, right. And nor do you want to try to numb it temporarily with alcohol or pot or whatever or other drugs or whatever.
Yeah. But it's, you know, it, I think that is, I also know that that is, like I said, I mean, it works. For a lot of our students, it works until it doesn't. Weed or, you know, alcohol.
Oh.
And
temporarily takes them away from that distress.
Yep. And especially, like, if it's also, you know, that's been modeled for them, and if they have a biological kind of predisposition to, you know,
utilizing it, like alcohol. Uh-huh.
So it's tricky. And, you know, I think most people, you know, I think still when I tell them what I do, you know, they're like, what problems do college students have, right? And it is, I think, again, as we kind of opening the doors for more students to come in, you know, we do have a number of students who have never had any kind of security when it comes to food or housing, right? Mm-hmm. So that has become, you know, just a part of their existence. And it's still really hard to study when you're not sure, you know, how you're going to, where you're going to sleep that night.
Yeah.
And, you know, this
is...
Or you're hungry. Right? Mm. And, you know, we have another, you know, a lot of students who they are financially helping their families, you know, while they're in college, right? So this may have been a big departure for some of, you know, previous generations who went to college where that wasn't necessarily a responsibility they had.
Yeah.
So, you know, so the stressors they're experiencing are real.
Are real and varied.
Yeah.
And significant.
Yep. And I guess another thing, like, I want to say I'm very defensive of, you know, the millennials and Gen Z, because I think there's also this perception that they're not resilient and they just can't, you know, handle their feelings and their snowflakes and that kind of thing. My experience, Ken, has been the exact opposite. They are hugely resilient. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the issue is that we're seeing them with a whole new set of stressors.
Yeah, right.
And, or, you know, even the high school students are, you know, younger. Like I said, those kids know that, but you told me, you know, when I was in kindergarten, it was okay to talk about my feelings. And now all of a sudden in seventh grade, you're telling me that I'm being a wimp for talking about my feelings.
Mm.
You know, especially like with our boys.
And you hear them bringing that up.
Absolutely.
Oh, thank goodness they know to bring that up,
yep.
That they are knowledgeable,
right?
That this is a something that isn't. That's not right for you. You're telling me that I shouldn't be talking about my feelings. Wait a minute, that's a beneficial thing. I'm owning my feelings,
yes.
And this is appropriate.
Yes,
and my self compassion is. They don't say self compassion,
no.
But self compassion is absolutely appropriate.
Yes. Yes.
Wow.
And I, you know, I think like that's where I'm talking about kind of there's this gap where, you know, when we see a child crying, for many of us, I hope, you know, we have that burst of empathy and we want, where we have that urge to
cuddle.
And I mean, I think this is why things that are going on in our country right now are so distressing because we know children need that.
Yeah.
But somehow part of the socialization, we think that you should no longer need that.
Yeah. As you get into college age, et cetera.
Yeah.
And that's not true.
Yeah. And I mean, certainly, like, you know, a good hug can, you know, do everybody good.
Yeah. Self-compassion and mutual compassion.
Mm-hmm.
I gotta settle in on that. I got a new new thing to think about.
Yeah.
Mutual compassion.
Yes. Wow. And it's hard sometimes.
Yeah.
It's hard, you know, especially with that person you don't agree with, right?
Yeah.
Or that who is, you know, kind of picking at that scab you don't want to touch, right?
Yeah.
When they're, that I always think that, like, if somebody says something to me and I get defensive, it's almost always because there's a kernel of truth in what they're trying to tell me, right?
Uh-huh.
So.
And you're trying to protect yourself.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
So. You know, before I forget, I want to ask a little bit about the center, Counseling and Wellness Center at Chico State.
Mm-hmm.
And so tell us a little bit about it.
Yes. It is a magical, perfect place.
I love
working there. It's great. So we have about... depending on how you count us, I mean, there's like 9 of us who work there, but not all full time. And our...
Of us, as in...
So we have several psychologists licensed, you know, PhD in counseling psychology. And then we have licensed marriage and family therapists and a couple of social workers as well. And we are also a training site. So for our students who are going through our marriage and family program, and our social work program, students can apply.
So Chico State has these two programs.
Correct.
Can you please say those again?
Sure. We have a marriage and family therapy program, and we also have a social work program.
So Chico State students could enter into those programs. And so part of their training happens at the
counseling center. Yep.
Counseling center, wellness and counseling center. Okay.
So, and we take that, that's a very serious, I mean, we take that very seriously, training kind of the next generation
Great.
Of folks.
Absolutely.
So,
hey, can I say something real quick? I just think the name of the center, counseling and wellness, you know, again, non-stigma, big picture wellness. It's about wellness.
Absolutely.
Just like when you, if you stub your toe or you have a cold, we're as healthcare professionals interested in helping with wellness.
Absolutely.
Well, emotional and mental situations or conditions, and then the helping of that for wellness there as well. It's all connected.
Right. It's, you know, it's. So, you know, what I will say is that we have an outreach program where we do a lot of presentations and we try to do some education.
To students.
To students, where we try to focus on some of these, like, okay, how might you cope with these distressing emotions and that kind of thing.
Good.
So the challenge is that as the demand for our services is going up, you know, we are now seeing more students coming to us when they're in crisis, and, you know, specifically when they are having thoughts of dying or having thoughts of suicide. And so sometimes our challenge is, you know, we've got to help them stay safe and make sure that they're okay. And just the demand for the services doesn't always allow us to do some of that healing, right?
Some of that,
and focus
more,
on
more
the wellness stuff.
And more of the wellness stuff, because you have a more acute situation
exactly.
if they're suicidal
right.
or near suicidally kind of
absolutely
thinking. So you got that acute thing to deal
right.
with.
Right. So we have to stabilize
to the depth,
them.
More depth. Yeah. Boy, that sounds familiar.
Yep.
And you indicated that again, like we discussed in the beginning of the show, that there's an increase in people in general in the country and at Chico State elsewhere requesting acknowledging the fact that their wellness, their emotional and mental wellness could be helped by a professional. There's been more of that because of opinion, because of an opened, more open-minded acceptance of this need for that element of our wellness.
Absolutely. But I guess I do want to add the caveat that I also worry that, you know, we need more mental health is code for because I don't want to hear your problems. I don't want to talk to you about your problems. Meaning, like, if I'm interacting with you at the grocery store, if I'm interacting with you as, you know, a colleague at work, don't tell me about what's going on in your life. Please go see a therapist for that.
Oh, yeah. Well,
and so that's also, you know, that concerns me too.
We ain't thinking that.
Yeah.
I mean, that ain't.
Right.
That is not exactly the
right.
goal.
So again, that's about kind of, do we have a culture of kind of mutual compassion where, you know, some of these things are not about pathology. It's about creating a community where, you know, we're taking care of each other.
Mutual wellness. Yeah.
And so I, as you know, much as I worry about the students that are coming through our door, I got to tell you that I'm worried about my colleagues who are working at the counseling center too, because we're hearing, you know, harder and harder stories. Oh. And so that compassion fatigue is also a thing in our business. So we could do a whole other show on that.
Yeah, we could. And we got it in ours too.
Yeah.
I mean, in the medical, we call it, what do we call it? I forget, but fatigue, you know, where you have less caringness.
Absolutely.
Next, and you run to the next room instead of dealing with helping the patient.
Exactly. And, you know, so we try to get ahead of it every semester by talking about it. That, you know,
there's an idea.
Yeah, right?
Good idea.
I mean, but talking about, you know, even just...
Burnout. That was the word I wanted to use.
Yep. Yep. So compassion fatigue generally comes before burnout, right? So if you can get, like, if you can identify, like, wow, I don't know if I can hear another story like that. And so what we try to do up in the counseling center as best we can is, you know, I might go to my colleague and say, I just heard, had two students in a row that really had hard stories. Would you be willing to pick up that person who just walked in? Because I need a little bit of a break.
Oh, yeah. So ask for help so you can zero in a little more on what your needs are relative to your care of your clients.
So I think that's an important piece that I very much want to kind of...
Team approach.
Yeah, put in there that, you know, we, those of us who are doing the caring, doing the caregiving, I should say, we're human beings too.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know... And we spend 50 minutes with a student because we know that anything less than that then also feels, you know, that can feel dismissive to a student, right? 50 minutes is often not enough, right?
Right, yeah.
And so I think that is has also been a challenge to explain to the larger kind of society that, you know, seeing five students a day or seeing, you know, multiple new people a week takes a toll.
Takes a toll on the caregiver.
On the caregiver.
On
yep.
the psychologist.
The practitioner, yeah.
The practitioner, yeah.
And so I think this idea that I don't know that we...
Mutual compassion. Mm-hmm. Have you heard that term before?
Yeah. Yes.
Yes.
Right?
So you work in an environment where mutual compassion, mm-hmm. in other words, compassion for your coworkers and yourself is part of what you need to do.
We do.
In your work.
We do. And I think... You know, so now we're seeing this, I'm finally starting to see some stories on, you know, how is this influx of so many people coming to all these counseling centers and VAs and, you know, all these places all over the country affecting the people who are going into the work.
How's it impacting the caregivers, the professionals?
Yep.
Wow, yeah.
Because it's not, you know, change and healing take time.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I, you know... Oh, man, we could go down a political sideline here if you want it, I suppose. It's probably not such a great idea. But let me just say this. Mm-hmm. I think, hopefully, as time goes on, as we build our mutual compassion, and specific to that, as caregivers, providers, the emotional and mental wellness of humans is more accepted and more energy and actually money. I gotta say the money thing, sorry.
Totally, right? And so I think where I feel the most hopeful is actually the neuroscience research, right? The more that we actually have some brain science to prove, right, that shaming somebody is bad for their brains, a child's brain. Like if we can kind of show that if we're doing that, then that costs us more when it comes to providing services to that student
for the rest
in
of their
school.
Life.
Right. For the rest of their lives.
That's funny. That not funny.
Yeah.
But that I was thinking about that article in the News and Review on mental health in college students. That was the May 17th Chico News and Review. And that's exactly the point that this Democrat in California legislature, Richard Pan, he put an economic spin on it too. You know, there's consequences to these mental conditions if we ignore them. The medical and mental health and caregiving costs for people is great.
Yep,
is goes up as their life goes on.
Absolutely.
So there is an economic benefit.
Absolutely, I know.
Besides a human.
Yes, right.
Benefit.
It's being the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, that is certainly, if there's one thing my hope for my own children is that, you know, they will get some of these skills of compassion and learning to regulate their emotions, you know, much earlier than college.
Hopefully so. Mm-hmm. How old are your children again?
So I have twins who just turned 13.
Oh.
And then
there's an age for learning this.
Oh, it sure is. They're teaching me a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And then I have an 8-year-old son.
Oh, how wonderful. Yes. So Dr. Junie Bengeri-Stevens, PhD, Director, Associate Director of the Counseling and Wellness Center at Chico's, California State University, Chico. Thank you so much for
sharing your
expertise with us today.
Absolutely.
Hopefully we can revisit some of this on into the future.
Indeed.
Hey, I need to say a couple things. I know what it is. The Doctor's Inn is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Chico Skywatch, offering an informational film about geoengineering and aerosol climate spraying on the fourth Thursday of every month at no charge. Chico Skywatch also sends local water samples to a state-certified lab for heavy metals testing. More information at chicoskywatch.org and at the weekly Saturday Chico Farmers Market. And the Doctor's Inn is also made possible not only by generous contributions from UKZFR supporters, but also by the Downtown Chico Business Association. Supporting Downtown Chico for over 40 years, the Downtown Chico Business Association presents the Thursday Night Market that's happening right now as we speak from April 5th through September 27th. You'll find farm fresh produce, fresh cut flowers, herbs, arts and crafts, locally prepared foods, live music, and more. For details and vending applications, visit downtownchico.com. And keep Chico vibrant by shopping downtown. And remember the voices that you heard, the opinions voiced on this show are not necessarily the opinions of underwriters, staff, or anybody else. They're opinions of Dr. Kenneth Logan and Dr. Benjerry Stevens. Mm-hmm.